At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, August 25th. On today's show, a late-night meeting breaks the logjam on stimulus now. Biden's $5 trillion stimulus is about to become reality. See, I'm a positive person. Can Biden's $5 trillion stimulus duo package combined actually become reality? I'm saying I think it is. So we'll go into all the details of what's in this package and what happened last night. And a dollar decline. Major warning signs about the U.S. dollar. So where should you be putting your money this morning? We're going to hear from a couple of experts on this issue, some legendary investors on what they see in the economy. Pay attention to these people, okay? They're not billionaires for no reason. They understand what's happening here. And we're going to meet the congressman who's made millions of dollars off of the Afghanistan war. No wonder he wants us to go back and do some more bombing. Ready to get uncomfortable? Morning Invest starts right now. And welcome into the show, everybody. We're going to get to the stimulus here in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about a new podcast that's out there, and they're sponsoring today's show. It's, you know, the investment world has changed a lot. Bitcoins, NFTs, robo-investors are all anyone's talking about these days, right? But how do you know if any of it's right for you? Modern Finance is the new podcast, helps demystify crypto, decentralized finance, and more. Modern Finance is hosted by Kevin Rose, listed as a top 25 angel investor by Bloomberg and one of the top 25 most influential people on the internet by Time Magazine. So Modern Finance is the crypto show for the novice and the expert person alike. Their mission is to demystify crypto and the world of NFTs without dumbing it down. Don't let your crypto guy friend be the life of the party. By listening to Modern Finance, you'll feel well-equipped to discuss and understand the crypto and NFT landscape. You'll feel informed about your investments. And 10 years, you know, 10 years ago, some people called cryptocurrency a scam. 5 years ago, people thought it was a fad. Now it's already over a $1 trillion market and growing. So the modern pod, it's the Modern Finance podcast.
The financial have a URL. It's modern.finance. So not modern.finance.com, but modern.finance.
That's a great URL.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can listen to it on anywhere you listen to podcasts. The financial landscape is harder than ever to navigate, but you don't have to do it alone. Download and subscribe to Modern Finance wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Modern Finance wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't be the last person on the train, next train out. Listen to Modern Finance and get ahead of the future of finance. So our thanks to them.
Yeah. All right. I gotta fix that.
So we do have some breaking news on the stimulus front this morning. It was a pretty eventful night. 2 days of, it was eventful last night, maybe late night pizza orders and so forth, but 2 days of congressional drama. Ended with wins for Speaker Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats last night. This was a big deal. This was not easy. Obviously, we're talking about the infrastructure piece of this, the roads and bridges piece of this, but more importantly was the $3.5 trillion human infrastructure piece of this. So Democratic leadership had a late night last night, and all 220 Democrats voted for a $3.5 trillion budget resolution embedded in a House rule. So that measure also set a September 27th deadline for a House vote on the Senate's $1 trillion TSA roads and bridges infrastructure package. Okay, so they'll have, and it's, I'm going to go through each piece of this. So what's in it? Or will there be additional checks? I'm going to talk about elder care, child care. So just pay attention, okay, because I'm going to go through what's all in this in the framework. Now, this is not finalized. But I'm going to go dive deep into this in just a moment here. Thank you for your super chat, David Allen. I appreciate it. To be clear, this is a $5 trillion package over 10 years. This is a transformative, massive package for the American economy. It's and could be absolutely life-changing for millions of Americans once it's implemented. So the real issue now is the clock starts ticking on the passage of that massive reconciliation bill that's key to enacting President Joe Biden's legislative agenda, especially the American Jobs Plan and the American Family Plan, the two of them. You know, there was initial criticism that, hey, we should not be doing these two things together. You know, roads and bridges and highways and all that stuff should be separate from this. But in the end, Nancy Pelosi felt that it was we needed to get this done together. And by the way, progressives won last night. This is a huge win for progressives. The moderate sort of conservative wing of the Democratic Party got crushed. So this is a big win for anybody like myself who's a progressive that wants to see transformative legislation in this country. We got it last night.
I'm not trying to rain on a parade, but why is it that whenever it's for us, like they're spreading it out over 10 years, but like when it's the CARES Act, when $5 trillion went to the big companies, it was instant. Like, why is there, like, how is it as beneficial if it's over 10 years? Because couldn't somebody, another president come in and stop it before the whole 10 years is done? Or,
yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, first of all, let's be clear. We still don't know how this money will be dispersed over that amount of time. So we don't yet know why. Because you can't, well, there are certain programs. We did talk about this a few weeks ago. There are certain programs you can't do all at once. I mean, there's removal. There's like contracts of removal of identifying where these lead pipes are in people's, you know, in people's neighborhoods, and the removal then of lead pipes. This is not going to be like an instantaneous thing.
So, well, right, but the money could be available instantaneously. So it's like you make the money available instantly, because like then how are they going to determine who gets? So every year they're going to have to determine who gets money and then what. Like, okay, this year we're going to focus on lead pipes. Next year we're going to focus on bridges, you know, because we've only got so much each year to work with. So, right. You know, that's what it doesn't go into a coffer and like they can pull from it for anything that's needed within, you know, 5 years or whatever.
Right. And, you know, look, what we saw, these like shovel ready projects under Obama, which weren't which, you know, the Obama administration, you know, that was, they were not shovel ready. So they were basically lying to us. And that money ended up being wasted. Remember the Solyndra disaster. So, yes, we don't know the meat of this yet. And we don't know the line by lines of this yet. We have a basic framework. So hold your horses, young David. We'll see. Okay. And we will be critical. Like once we have actual details of where this money is going to sit and for how long and who's going to get access to it. And what, we'll go through that in September, likely when we get to actually see a framework of this thing. So we have preliminary information, which we'll get to in a moment. But I agree with you. We'll hold them accountable on that.
Yeah, because basically it's still less than the war budget every year if you take it and break it up that long.
Right, which $750 billion a year for the defense budget. And so this is $5 trillion over 10 years for infrastructure. So again, we'll see how it all breaks out and what projects are on a timetable. Like, is it the solar infrastructure, the electrification plan, the putting in roads and bridges plan? Obviously, they're not going to be building every bridge and every road in 1 year. So I think this will be spread out based on government contracts and who wins those contracts. And it's going to be out of that bank account for the next 10 years. So the infrastructure measure includes $550 billion in new spending and is aimed at revitalizing the nation's roadways, bridges, broadband access, so internet access. And then the $3.5 trillion measure, which is supported by Democratic leaders and its progressive faction, includes funding for climate measures, infrastructure investments left out of the other bill. And also, interestingly, they managed to get into this framework residency status for millions of migrant workers, which is, in my opinion, fantastic. These people who come to the United States work tirelessly doing jobs that Americans don't want. Then these businesses rely on their work. And they, by the way, they pay taxes also, but they can't get citizenship, right? So giving them residency. So allowing residency for a million of migrant workers that these companies rely on. And by the way, it's the little secret in Washington that these Republicans also wanted this. because so many of their corporate constituents want these migrant workers as well. Also, there'll be 2 years of paid tuition at public universities. I wish they would have done four. I don't know why we didn't. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll go get a little bit, you know, get a little bit more on this. But Nancy Pelosi last night announcing this and saying this was a major breakthrough and this is going to be transformative for the American people. Were you about to say something? Or maybe well,
I was just going to say, they're always happy to give us 50%. Like, it's like the most they can ever do. Like, they can't fix 100% of child poverty or anything. It's like, we can do 50%. Like, that's all we can do. We've got the ability to do it, but we're going to only do 50% of your college. We'll do 2 years, not four. We'll give you, you know, half of this, but, you know, it always baffles me. It's like, we'll help some of you, but we're not going to help you all.
Like Obamacare, right?
Yeah.
Like just a big windfall for insurance companies couched in, you know, it'll help you a little bit. But mostly it's a big help for insurance companies and the pharmaceutical company. Excuse me. I'm going to cough.
Yeah, no worries. We knew what you meant. But yeah, that's the thing. Like they put things in these bills that are like specific language to get people on board and say, this is for you. This is going to help you. This is going to benefit you. But like, until you go in and read the fine print, you don't realize how much of it is like how little of it actually benefits you and how much of it benefits the drug companies or the, and, you know, military industrial complex. Somebody else is benefiting way more than you, or you wouldn't even have it.
No, Wall Street, look, let's be clear about this. Wall Street is going to benefit dramatically from this bill, okay? There's going to be plenty of money that's going to be funneled to these. And, you know, it may be funneled to companies that are doing green technology and green work. But still, they're still companies, right? They're still Wall Street companies. They might be doing solar, but they're still on Wall Street. And they're going to make money off of this. And so, look, hey, if you want to be a part of this, you know, figure out how you can be investing in some of these companies, you know, day trading, investing and so forth and making money like they are, you know, finding out where some of this money is going to go would behoove you. I certainly have. You know, I've been watching where this money is going to go. And so I've been making smart trades based on that. Your Imperial Majesty says community college is a 2 years curriculum. Right. True enough, but, you know, it's often not seen as a, you know, right? Community college is also not, it's junior college, right? It's not seen as helpful for you to get a job, isn't it, right? I mean, the idea is, like, why can't we give people a four-year university like they do in Europe for free so kids aren't saddled with student loan debt? There's an idea. Wouldn't that be a brilliant idea? So let's go deeper into this bill now, shall we? So again, if you're just tuning in, $3.5 trillion stimulus plan is now tied together with the $1.2-ish trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill. And it won a key House vote last night, and it moves forward now for a reconciliation vote towards the end of September. And there's a lot in this thing that we are going to get to here. So let's dive into it, shall we? Okay, so let's go deeper into this bill. What do Democrats expect to include in this emerging package? Remember, this is not final. These are just some basic frameworks that I'm going to go through. So the legislation is expected to include paid family and medical leave. It is expected to subsidize childcare. It's expected to also have an extension of that expanded child tax credit. So this is a stimulus bill and could be thousands of dollars a month for families in this extension of the child tax credit and others. A universal pre-kindergarten program for 3 and 4 year olds and 2 years of tuition-free community college. It's also going to provide green cards to millions of immigrants. Those are some of the base level pieces of this, okay? And it would also extend expanded Affordable Care Act subsidies that were approved earlier this year in the COVID-19 package. It would also broaden medical benefits to cover dental, vision, and hearing. And it would also aim to reduce the cost of prescription drugs. Now, this is a huge piece of this. Now, my wife and I were sitting there last night talking about Medicare. And you realize, like, what a crap show our health system is. I mean, you don't need me to tell you. Like, you know, I'm sure, just let me know in the chat. Like, what are you guys paying for different prescription drugs? You know? And it would allow Medicare to negotiate prices. And one of the things my wife and I were talking about last night is that Medicare, of course, you know, is under basically is illegal for them to negotiate lower drug prices, right? Because they're run by private contracts.
Well,
so
there was
they can't do it.
There was a cream that I needed for a like a rash kind of thing that I get, and it's $300 for the tube here in the United States. I went to Juarez, Mexico, and got it for $6 for the tube, and it's $300 here. Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's like, why?
Right. I mean, you know, what's really sad, too, is like the healthcare prices, like the hospital bills. New York Times just did an expose about all of the different, you know, I slam the New York Times on a regular basis, and occasionally they do some decent work. But anyway, they did a breakdown of how our health system is crap, you know, and they looked at, you know, if you have a different healthcare plan, you have an insurance plan, the same procedure will cost basically twice as much as if you didn't have insurance. So out of pocket, if you didn't have insurance, you'd pay $725 for this particular surgery or procedure, minor procedure. But if you have insurance, it'll cost like $1,800 to get the procedure. And it's not illegal. Like, this is all corruption. Like, this is corruption at the highest level. And it's all legal. Congress has allowed this to happen. You know, Becky Medved says, I needed an antibiotic cream for an eye infection. It was less than 1/116th of an ounce. It was $175. Holy crap, Becky. Yeah.
But look at what people pay for inhalers in this country.
Yeah. Yeah. Sunshine Speaks is $90 a month for heart medicine. Unbelievable. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, I mean, that Americans are saddled with. You want to know why America is falling behind the rest of the world? Just look at our healthcare system. Just a disaster. Just a disaster. So
like
it would allow
every list for quality healthcare.
So it would allow Medicare to negotiate prices in this new stimulus, among other steps. So the big question, does the plan try to address climate change? Yes. So this new stimulus plan would include climate change provisions. Democrats are proposing a series of ideas, including tax credits for clean energy investments and a plan that resembles a clean electricity standard across the United States. It would also aim to reduce carbon emissions by the electricity sector by 80% and economy-wide by 50% by 2030. That's huge, by 2030. And, you know, can't come quick enough. You know, if you interview any climate scientists, I mean, they're all pointing to the same thing. We've got less than 15 years until basically the point of no return, utter disaster on increasing temperatures across the world. So Democrats are also proposing, and I love this, polluter import fees. Such fees would help lower emissions globally when generating revenue for the United States, effectively acting as an emissions-based tariff. If you're polluting, you'll be taxed on it. Democrats are also hoping for other cost-saving measures elsewhere, such as allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. A Congressional Budget Office analysis of a bill that passed in the House in 2019 estimated that price negotiation of these prescription drugs basically would lower spending by about $456 billion over 10 years. What are these big RX companies going to do about it? You know, how are they going to handle it? Oh, are there other parts of the world? I mean, in the United States, they can run television commercials like crazy. So you can go and buy your prescription drugs and they can make billions of dollars. Democrats say they will raise taxes on corporations and high income households also to fund this plan. But we don't yet know what that's going to look like. You know, Joe Biden has said that he's not going to raise taxes on anybody making less than $400,000 a year. We'll see if he sticks to that. I know there's been discussions about whether or not there'd be a tax on gas mileage, et cetera. So we'll see if he sticks to that or if he's lying to us.
Come on, man.
Sorry. Keeping it real, Joe. Keeping it real. So President Biden also has proposed increasing the corporate tax rate to 28% from 21%, which would tighten the net on U.S. companies' foreign earnings. And it would raise the top capital gains tax rate to 43% from 23%. Some Democrats have balked at the scale of those increases, though, those moderate Democrats saying no, no way. But I just want to remind you of how much money billionaires are making right now. Just if you needed this reminder, take a look at this new chart out this morning. Breaking news, America's 708 billionaires are now worth $4.8 trillion after gaining $1.8 trillion, up 62% during the pandemic. That wealth growth alone could pay for over half of the Democrats' $3.5 trillion budget plan. Don't tell us we can't afford to invest in working families. And look at the list. Look at Bezos. His net worth grew 66% over the last during the pandemic. Elon Musk up 612%. Bill Gates up 33%. Mark Zuckerberg up 135%. Yeah, look at that. Unbelievable.
Now show the workers' wages since 1970. What percentage of growth have they seen?
Flatline.
Really?
Yeah, huh. Flatline. Hey, take it for a second. I got to go cough.
Yeah, yeah. So what Clayton's basically saying is these people have seen their wealth go up like this, like at a constant incline, right? And the people who are making them that money, the people that are working their asses off every single day for crap wages have stayed here. So what it should have been is it should have been a parallel. They should have been going up together. As the profits and stuff increase, people's wages should have increased, but they didn't. Theirs did this while the people stayed flat. That is a load of crap. You know, like we talk about, you know, the capitalism and everybody's like, well, you know, if people just work, they're lazy or whatever. But, you know, in a capitalist system, I still think that those people that are making you the money should be rewarded for making you that money. And they give them nothing. They, you know, like they don't get a livable wage. Because people are arguing for a federal minimum wage of $15. I don't agree with that whatsoever. I don't think we should try to demand a minimum wage federally. I really don't. I don't think there should be a minimum wage, period. But I think that there should be some kind of system in place where companies are only can claim a certain percentage of profits and the rest have to go to their employees, because the employees are like, when I had my company, I was the CEO of a tech startup. I paid my people as much as I got paid. We all got paid the exact same. I just took what profits there were for the month and I split that between all of us and kept some of it in an account to keep the business going. Because I knew that if without those people, I wouldn't even have a company. I wouldn't be able to live in the house I lived in. I wouldn't be able to drive the car I was driving if it wasn't for those people coming to work every single day. And so I wanted them to be happy. I wanted them to want to be there. I wanted them to want to be part of what I was doing. But these people, they're so far removed from their employees, so far removed that they have nothing in common. Like they don't care about them. Jeff Bezos is going to space and thanking his employees. But it's like, put your money where your mouth is. He's saying verbally, I appreciate you. I appreciate you, my employees. Here I am. I'm going to space. I took a bunch of tax money. Here I go. Thank you, my workers. Thank you so much for making me a multi-billionaire. But I'm not going to pay you anymore. I mean, I'm not going to give you any more of my money. I have to have this. Look, I'm number one on this big list now. I'm like so important. Look at me. But I'm not going to help you. So, you know, as wages increase, or the, you know, the amount these people make goes up, so should wages. They should be on a parallel scale all the way up. And it's a shame that we have flatlined since the 70s.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. And this idea of a $15 an hour minimum wage is such a controversy, right? More like $23 an hour to actually not be a poverty wage. So,
well, in rural areas like New York City, even that is going to, like, look at the cost of apartments in New York City.
You couldn't live there on $23 an hour.
No, and yesterday, we covered this in the newsletter this morning. The, you know, New York City has now eclipsed San Francisco as the most expensive place to live. So if you want to rent an apartment in New York City, $2,800 for like basically like the cheapest place you're going to find. $2,800 a month.
Yeah, I had a friend that was paying $3,000. Oh, I'll give you an example that of me personally. I was looking at potentially getting an apartment in San Francisco for 500 square feet, $3,000 a month. And this was on a courtyard of an apartment complex. $3,000 a month for 500 square feet.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Not unbelievable.
$23 isn't going to help me live there.
Yeah. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. Meanwhile, these conservative Democrats, you know, we'll see where they come down on all of this. Right now, they lost. This was a pretty big victory for progressive last night. So what are the hurdles for this thing to actually pass, the new stimulus to actually pass? Democratic leaders need to keep every single senator in line. And no GOP support is expected. No Republican will support this bill. But I guarantee you, though, they will go back to their districts and talk about how much money is coming to their district, even though they had nothing to do with it.
Well, let's not forget the donors are going to be a big determining factor. You know, it's probably the donors that were like, Nancy, you need to get back to Washington and you need to get this passed. You know that there's pork in here for us. Go get these people back here.
And I love pork.
Yep.
I love me some pork. So, Vice President Kamala Harris would be casting this tie-breaking vote in the House where legislation can pass with a simple majority. Democrats can then only lose three votes total. Three votes total. So, that's a look at the stimulus update, everyone. Major breaking news on this and surprising turnaround. We thought literally they were kicking this to September. But in a late night, last night meeting, they managed to get it done. Moderate Democrats lost this battle, which is good news. Those you might as well even just call them conservative Democrats, because that's what they really are. And progressives won. So now it moved forward on September 27th with an actual vote on this stimulus. So great news on this front. Great news, great news, great news. I don't want to downplay that at all. Let's talk about our next story here. You know, it's interesting to see what happens when people get stimulus money. So, you know, we've seen a number of different stories over the past few weeks and months about how people have had their life saved as a result of stimulus, right? How they've been able to pay bills, get out of debt, start a business, remove some of that social anxiety, food insecurity, whatever it is, right? We've seen these stories about people who've been able to actually do something with their lives because of stimulus. Well, now we have this new story out this morning, and it turns out that this is pretty amazing, that in half of young investors invested their stimulus money. Isn't that surprising? Half of young investors actually invested their stimulus money.
Oh, crap. Well, you know what that means? They're going to be
like,
what
does that mean?
Some of these people have taken the stimulus and they've used it for positive things and they've advanced society a little bit. We got to make sure we cut them out of the next stimulus. We can't have that.
Exactly. That's exactly when I saw this. I was like, that's exactly what's happened here. How dare these people actually make some money off of, and actually put this money to work? You know, half of young investors invested their stimulus money. And here's where they put it. Let's see. Of those aged 18 to 34, 49% did so. 15% invested in individual stocks. 11% purchased cryptocurrency. 9% invested in mutual funds. 8% bought exchange-traded funds. So mostly they put it into assets. Now, I wish they would have put more into crypto as an asset instead of stocks. But I also wish they, more people would have put it into real estate, because we're going to talk about the declining U.S. dollar in just a few moments on the show. With the rise of investing chatter on social media and the ability to make trades on a mobile app, it's no wonder people use some of their newfound cash to invest. During the pandemic, there were a lot of people who weren't as distracted with their normal lives. We were spending a ton more time on our phones. More than a quarter of investors polled started investing within the last 18 months, and 73% began in 2019 or earlier. Yeah. Momentum surveyed 5,000 U.S. adults between August 4th and August 9th. Of those, 45% are investors. So now it's just over part of their overall financial picture. They, you know, they made money. So they invested their stimulus money in stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, real estate, and good, you know, into real estate. Cryptocurrency, huge, huge. Look at all, so the dark blue are those investors who started in 2020 during the pandemic using stimulus money.
Good for them.
Yeah. But again, this is exactly, you know, this is like, you know, you have these people like Susie Orman, like the key to your freedom is having that security, that emergency fund. You need an emergency fund.
Do you know how many people in this country are this far away from complete financial collapse and like an accident? Somebody cuts a finger in their house. They don't have insurance, so they've got to go to the emergency room. So they're walking on eggshells knowing that if they get injured or if something happens, their car breaks down, a tire blows, they're screwed. And so they get in such an uproar when they think for 1 second that somebody's going to take some of this stimulus money and save a dollar of it for an emergency fund. Like that little bit of security that people need in order to enjoy their lives pisses the government off.
Right. They'd much rather have it in U.S. dollars, right? Just have it in U.S. dollars, a declining U.S. dollar.
If you have savings, you're not going to be as dependent on us. We can't have that. You need to depend on the government. We're the ones that are going to make sure you get only what you need. So don't save it. Wait for us to help you.
I mean, and those who say that's garbage, to me, it's hypocrisy, because you remember during conservatives, at least during this is why, you know, I love calling out hypocrisy. Remember during the George W. Bush years, one of the big controversies, of course, is that conservatives wanted you to be able to use your Social Security money invested in the stock market. Right. This was basically going to be a boon for Wall Street, of course. Right. That's what it was. It was a big wet kiss for Wall Street. And of course, there was huge backlash. No, how are you going to? It's risky. How are you going to do this? And but conservatives wanted it. President Bush wanted it. And then he scrapped that plan. But now conservatives are against you having a little extra money that you could actually invest. It's funny how times change, isn't it? Like, oh, these people are using their money to invest in stocks and crypto.
And what's funny is they take the money. We give them money every month. We give each Congress and Senate person about $15,000 minimum a month, right? And they invest it. They become millionaires while they're in there. So if we can't invest our money or we can't have savings, then it should pass to them too. So I think we should lower their wages to $15 an hour. Okay,
let's do it.
$15 an hour. Everybody, let's vote. Who all wants to lower the Congress and Senate's hourly wage to $15 an hour? Make them live the same way we do. We need to remove their health care benefits, make them through the employer. So we will decide like what benefits we'll give them, like COBRA or something like that, and make them pay like $1,000 a month for it or something like that. Like, we need to make them live the same way they expect us to live. Otherwise, they're never going to get it. I know, Stewie. Otherwise, they're never going to get it.
$15 an hour for Congress. Take away their, I don't know if we should take away their $30,000 a year furniture budget.
Like I said last week, I think we could cut it in half. I think they'd be good with $15,000. We'll just make them go to IKEA, and then they have to have a camera so we can watch them put it, and they have to put it together. They can't hire staff.
Man, IKEA furniture, putting that stuff together. Oh my God. Like, I even, you know, put, I mean, this is IKEA, you know, I put this together, this TV stand here, I built that, but that took me a whole day.
I don't know how many times I've put together IKEA furniture and I'll get done. I'll be like, oh crap, I put the side on backwards. It's like, I got one hole that doesn't line up. And I'm like, oh man. And it wasn't clear in the instructions.
Yeah. And here, be honest. I mean, have you just left it that way? Like where, like if it wasn't structural and it wasn't really aesthetic and you couldn't really see it, like have you left it there where you put the wrong thing in the wrong hole and you left
it? The only time I didn't was when it was crucial to, like, I couldn't put a door in.
Yeah. So I've done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I'm building a table right now where I built the whole table's done. And I'm like, this just doesn't look right. But the instructions were not clear at all. And it wasn't IKEA this time. I will give them at least not credit for that. But it was, And I have to go back and redo the whole top piece. I'm so pissed. Anyway, yes, have Congress have members of Congress build their own IKEA furniture
on video.
They'll have to buy the Gnut bed or whatever it's called, or the Newton Nukfotak. I don't know what they're called. Anyway,
could you imagine? How they would act and what they would do if that's how they were paid? Like, they were paid for the hours they actually worked, and then we could say, okay, at the end of every month, if you vote in favor of the people, like, we would lobby them and be like, vote in favor of this bill, and we'll give you a 5% raise next year.
Yeah, 5%. By the way, I'm waiting to see if inside of this reconciliation package, it's not finalized yet, but will there be a raise for members of Congress? Wouldn't that be rich? And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's already been talked about that there would be a raise inside of this stimulus package for members of Congress. I mean,
I don't think it was for members of Congress. It was for aides, like for their aides and stuff. At least what I saw, I didn't see anything about Congress or senators getting a raise, but maybe I didn't see a portion of that. But it seemed to be an increase for any like aides or people that they hire.
Yeah. I did see that, which is good, you know, because they get paid like crap wages and they, you know, work 20 hours a day, which is fine. So pay them better. Yes. But again, this is not finalized, so we do not yet know. But, you know, we'll see. So young people investing in, you know, young people took stimulus money and you know what? They didn't spend it all on groceries or do other things, but they put some money aside to give their life, you know, their future some positivity here, right? They bought some crypto. It would be interesting to see how much of their returns they received as a result of this. Like, how much did they increase their position, right? Did they buy Bitcoin at the dip? And now they've doubled their amount of money that they've had invested. Like, it would be really interesting to see that. Clayton, you just raised a good point. Dean says Congress should have to put all of our IKEA furniture together. That way we can actually work what we pay for. I love that. Yes. Congress should put all, like, just send it to Chuck Schumer to put together your new Gesundheit bed or whatever it is.
What a novel idea. We could make our currency backed by their labor.
Exactly. I love this. Have him put the Malm together. You have to put the Malm dresser together. Yeah. What else?
Put correctly, some, too. It has to be correct.
Yeah. To put that together. Yeah. Put any of these together. Okay. The Schmadstad Platza. Schmadstad Platza. Put the Schmadstad Platza together. I love the names. Schmadstad Platza. Anyway, so young people, good on you for investing. Just be smart about it. And look, kids, I mean, you know, that's the thing, like rainy day fund, kids can sleep on couches. They're resilient, right? Like, you're not having to take care of 80, you know, three kids in your family. You're a young person, right? So, you know, how much of a huge rainy day fund do you need set aside? Have that rainy day fund set aside in the form of crypto. It's pretty darn liquid. If you need to move that money out into US dollars for any reason, great. And more places are accepting it anyway. So take some of that investment money or stimulus money and put it away. I'm all for it.
On my website, I take crypto.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome. All right, let's tell you about our friends over at Ultimate Ears, and then we're going to get back to some news here. So Ultimate Ears has done something great. You know how people really don't like a lot of those sort of standard earbuds and earphones that are out there because they just don't fit their ears? Well, the Ultimate Ears fits is perfect. They'll send you a kit where you actually, it's amazing, you actually, in 60 seconds, you put this thing in your ear, it gets warm, and it actually conforms to your ear using this light form technology. So the mold fits right to your ear. And then after a minute, after what, 60 seconds, the purple LED lets you know that it's done and it's hardened to the shape of your ear. So no more just getting some generic factory earbuds that don't fit. You know, some people even have different shaped ears, like where one ear is a little different than the other, right? So how can you make a mass-produced earbud? Well, you can't. That's the answer. And these things are fantastic. They sound fantastic. They're built on leading expertise by pro musicians and hi-fi enthusiasts, over 25 years experience, engineered to provide a full, warm sound with a tight, punchy low end. And you can set custom EQ presets all through the app. You can play and pause music. And by the way, this is a great back to college gift. And look at this sale that they've got going on. Earbuds that truly fit. You're going to get 15% off of this when you go to their website. Take an additional 15% off with a pair of Ultimate Ears Fits True Wireless Earbuds at ue.com/fits and use the promo code INVEST when you're checking out. That's 15% off with promo code INVEST at ue.com/fits. Really, really great. Have you tried these yet?
I've not tried that particular one, no. I was thinking about it because I have the Apple AirPods Pro right now, and they're so inconsistent, and they don't really sound that great. So I've been wanting to try
something for a lot of people, they just don't fit. I mean, that's the bottom line, and that's the whole point of what they've been able to do with these is like you put it in your ear, and then you wait until the light turns purple, and then you'll feel like a warming in your ear, and it fits the perfect mold to your ear. Bluetooth sound. It's really, really great. Works with your phone, listening to music, taking phone calls, anything. Custom fit earbuds.
That's one thing I will say. I've never found any of those little ear pieces that come with any of these headphones that fit my ear. Like I feel like my ears must be like different on both sides because I'll get one that fits really nice and one that doesn't with the same thing. So it's like I've never had a pair fit me properly.
Yeah. And that's what these do because it's perfectly custom fit to your ear. So check them out. Go get 15% off with code INVEST, a great back to school gift, or just if you need it for classes or whatever, 15% off with code INVEST, ue.com/fits. Check them out. All right, moving along here on the show today, we're going to talk about the US dollar. So there have been some troubling signs in the economy lately, and some big time investors have been, been looking at this. Now, we've been warning you here on the show for the last year that the US dollar is on the decline. And hopefully if you've been watching our show for a year, great. If you're new to the show, subscribe. I'm glad to have you here. We're live every morning at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time right here. So please subscribe, hit that little bell notification so you never miss an alert when we're live. I've been sounding this alarm for over a year. That the US dollar is headed for a disaster. And it's all of the signs are mounting. All of the warning signs are there. We now are seeing incredible trouble in the credit market. I've been promising you that I'm going to release this video, a deeper video on this, but I've been sick, so my throat has been out of commission, and I want to do that when I'm feeling a little bit better, so I will get to that. But two legendary investors have something to say right now about the US dollar. And it's not good that the dollar is going to depreciate further versus its peers over the next few years. We're talking about, the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency of the world. Now, what happens if the U.S. dollar is suddenly not the reserve currency of the world? China is sitting there saying to themselves, wait a minute, why are we using the U.S. dollar as our reserve currency? China, which is now basically the global superpower. Right, its economy has done better than the United States during the pandemic.
Do you know a percentage of what the dollar has decreased from the 70s till now? Like what
in value? I don't have it in front of me. I don't have it in front of me.
Because you just think
I think it's like 60%. I think it's 67. It's something like 67% of the value of what it was in the 1970s.
Yeah, so if you're a country and you heavily invested in this dollar, which you had well before the 70s, right? A lot of people had invested in the U.S. dollar,
right?
And they're sitting there and they're still using it to trade oil because of its status at that time. But right. You're looking at it decrease, and it never bumps up like crypto or anything like that. It's on a steady downclip. So it is a stupid investment to invest in the dollars, and these countries are not stupid. They're not going to do that because they want our dollar to crash. They'd like nothing more than for it to go back up because they're heavily invested in it as much as we are.
Right.
But it's just not a smart investment.
No, it's not. And Jeffrey Gundelach, who is a legendary investor, spoke out about this last night. And he says there's some big warning signs here. I mean, and it's, we see it coming. I mean, the U.S. economy it's been run by people who literally almost like don't even know what they're doing with money at this point. We're running our economy. What did he say? We're running our economy like we're not interested in maintaining our global reserve currency status anymore. That's basically what he said. Huh. Billionaire bond investor Jeffrey Gundelach, the founder and the CEO of the $137 billion Double Line Capital, says his number one conviction over the years is that the U.S. dollar will decline as a consequence of current global economic policies, or current economic policies, resulting in the U.S. losing its sole reserve currency status. And here he is to go deeper in this issue.
The U.S. has enjoyed the status of sole reserve currency globally for decades, and it's an incredible benefit. We also have the biggest military in the world, which is kind of goes hand in glove with being a reserve currency, I think. But in the aftermath of the lockdowns and the pandemic that continues to wear on, the strongest economy in the world by far has been the Chinese economy. And the U.S. economy has bounced back with a lot of consumption. A lot of that consumption is going to China. It's one of the reasons China has such a strong economy. So what we're seeing is the United States is starting to fall behind in economic growth. That's not a new thing. That's been going on for a generation, the U.S. falling behind. But the Chinese economy is growing so rapidly that the estimates as to when the Chinese economy will be the largest in the world keep getting pulled forward. 20 years ago, it was thought to be 2050, the Chinese would be bigger than the U.S., and that was 2040. And now the estimates are maybe it's in the 2020s, maybe even 2028, the Chinese economy gets bigger. And China's made no secret of the fact that they want to be a global player and have at least a seat at the table of global reserve currency status. And they're spending like crazy on military and have also made no secret of the fact that they want their military to be dominant, maybe the biggest in the world. Also, they have huge savings in China. They have a culture of savings. They sort of the gold medalists of saving historically. And so when you put all those things together with the U.S. growing debt like crazy, we have debt to GDP that is fueling the majority of our so-called economic growth. So is it really economic growth when you borrow money or print money, send checks to people who turn around and buy goods on Amazon in addition to maybe paying down debt and speculating, and these goods come in from China? So we're running our economy in a way that is almost like we're not interested in maintaining global reserve currency status or the largest military or global, let's call it a superiority or control.
So, I mean... On the military piece, yes, China is ramping up their military spending, but I think they have a long way to go before they hit the amount of money we spend on our military, for crying out loud.
Well,
but
yeah,
nevertheless,
we spend 10 times more than all those countries combined.
Yeah. I mean, nevertheless, though, he's right on the nose as it relates to savings. And I mean, Linda here in our chat said, you know, and I've done stories on this where China has been buying up U.S. farmland because, you know, look, China owns like half of our country as it is. You know, the Canadian government stepped in when they were buying up like all of Vancouver, like every building in Vancouver, Canada was, you know, being bought by the Chinese until the Canadian government was like, whoa, 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 wait a second, stop. You know, we want to allow Canadians to be able to buy Canadian property. And so we are running our country like we're not interested in maintaining the global reserve currency status anymore.
Well, then I was reading an article that if China were to want to completely destroy the United States, all they would have to do, and it wouldn't benefit them to do so, but all they would have to do is flood the market with their stocks and bonds or whatever. Like if they just release those into the market, like it would crash because of all the power they hold in our economy.
I believe it. I mean, it doesn't take much to see that. Think about the amount, you know, the U.S. government and how much debt we owe to the Chinese.
Yeah. So, I mean, at one point, like years ago, it was like $500 billion a day or something like that. It was some crazy amount of money like that that we borrow from China.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So Ray Dalio, billionaire investor, legendary investor, one of the smartest minds in this space, also sees major declines for the U.S. dollar. And he points to what the Federal Reserve has been doing and inflation. I mean, how can you not talk about inflation? How can you not see that we are headed for a disaster as it relates to inflation in the next couple of months?
Well, and the thing is, what's crazy is like when the dollar was backed by gold, it had actual value. But once that was removed, these people think that in order to just fix the economy, let's just print some more money. Let's just go in the computer. Let's add a couple more zeros. We're good.
Right.
They are making invisible money, and that is never in the history of mankind or any kind of economy has never, ever worked. It always crashes every single time.
And every government currency in world history has collapsed. So what makes us think this time would be any different? And the U.S., to your point about debt, we are under the largest amount of debt we've ever seen in world history. I mean, and under those similar circumstances, with way less debt, countries have collapsed. Economies have collapsed. So why would this be any different? Now we are literally 10 times larger in the amount of debt than we've ever seen in world history.
I mean, the Lannisters didn't even have this much debt, and they weren't going to loan them money. Nobody was going to loan the Lannisters any more money, and they had way less debt than us.
Exactly. So here's Ray Dalio, a brilliant thinker on this, who sees these troubling signs for the U.S. economy.
Think of the economy as being like an individual and their pulse is dropping. When the pulse is dropping, the doctors come running in with the stimulant and they inject stimulant. Now that the economy is rebounding and inflation pressures are rebounding, there's not the same pressure to administer that stimulation. When it happens, when it becomes a problem, is first the rising interest rates start hurting financial asset prices. First, typically they hurt bonds, then they pass through and hurt stocks because still interest rates affect stocks. And when that starts to affect stocks, that's one thing. Maybe the stock market can correct 10 or 15% and the Federal Reserve can tolerate it. When it goes beyond that and starts to affect the economy, that's when you see the real trade-off have to surface.
Can I ask a question?
Shoot.
What rebound is he talking about?
Rebound in the U.S. dollar or just in the economy? He's talking about the U.S. economy.
He said the economy and also the rebound in the inflation. Like, I didn't see milk prices go down at all at the grocery store.
No. I mean, and what he's talking about is a rebound in the economy, which we've definitely seen. I mean, if you look at Wall Street, okay, because that's where we measure these economic, bull signs right now. There's no sign of a bear market. I mean, any investor right now is all excited about the next year and a half, where this is just going to be a continued bull cycle for stocks. And so Wall Street will continue to make just a boatload of money. But what's going to happen is the U.S. economy is going to collapse. I mean, the average worker, the U.S. dollar for the average worker is now going to be worthless. Worthless. So these companies will do well. People make money in the stock market. But the value of the U.S. dollar on the global stage is about to collapse. So all eyes this week. Because this week we have the Jackson Hole meeting with the Fed this Friday with Fed leaders. And the question is, will they continue to spend $120 billion a month buying up all of these crappy corporate bonds that have helped Wall Street, keeping Wall Street afloat? I mean, they're continuing to pump $120 billion into Wall Street to make sure that Wall Street is secure and liquid. And, you know, so the question will be on tapering. You know, when do they start pulling this back? So everyone is sort of waiting on Friday to see what happens. And this will give us some really clear signals, I think, going forward as to where the U.S. dollar shakes out in all of this. But $28 trillion in debt, government program that continues to funnel money to Wall Street, and they haven't cleared their balance sheets. And when you look at the credit market right now, and you look at that, they are basically pulling money out of the stock market and continuing to funnel $120 billion into Wall Street companies at 0% interest rates. Like, how is that possibly sustainable?
Well, and back in 2012, I know I always talk about Ron Paul, and everybody gets all up in arms about Ron Paul or whatever, but that guy was talking about, like, in 2008, we should have let Bear Stearns and all those, we should have let them collapse. We should have let them go. We should have let Wall Street have a major collapse, he said, because, like, you're going to recover from that a lot. He said it'd be hard. It would be tough. It'd be like another basically depression, but you would have recovered and not lost the complete power of the dollar, where now, if it crashes, there's no coming back. It's right. Gone.
Right. And, you know, where do you put your money? I mean, when you have no standard, we have no gold standard. So we don't have the US dollar backed by anything. Now it's backed by debt. That's all it's backed by. Enormous debt. Well, and the full faith and credit of the United States. What does that mean, really?
And there's probably maybe even people in chat that might remember in Germany, they had fiat currency. And at the end of their currency, they were actually taking, like, it's the equivalent of us taking dollar bills, 20s, 50s, 100s, and using it to start fires in our fireplaces. It was worthless.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what's happening in El Salvador, which is a few more days until they... you know, Bitcoin becomes fiat currency there. And
wasn't that
tender.
The Deutschmark?
The Deutschmark. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they're on the euro, of course. But so where do you put your money? I mean, Gundelach says he's still very, very bullish on gold. I mean, gold, even in this dip period right now, might be the perfect opportunity to buy gold because of this, you know, gold has this sort of soft position right now, but I'm telling you, gold, you know, as a store of value for 4,000 years hasn't gone anywhere.
But how do people that are living paycheck to paycheck invest in gold? Like, I can't take gold down to the grocery store and buy food for my family. Like, what do you do in that situation? Like, what does somebody do this? Because there's so many people here that are living paycheck to paycheck. They can't even do it. Like, they're waiting for a stimulus in order to do something. Like, what do they do?
Well, and that's the thing, right? So gold as a store of value, that's what I'm talking about, is a store of keeping it in the bank permanently as a, you know, taking those US dollars and turning those into gold, right? If you have US dollars, turning that into gold, okay? Or crypto, Bitcoin, other assets, or real estate. But as far as liquidity, then that's where we need to have, you know, that's where I think crypto is such a huge, you know, a huge future for people to be able to use a digital currency, a digital wallet, to be able to make those transactions. Because that's the big problem with gold, right? Is that it is illiquid. What are you going to do with a bar of gold? What are you going to do with coins of gold? You know, if you keep it in a safe or you keep it in some intermediary location. But I would read, we have a whole gold kit that you can read for free. Our friends over at Birch Gold have it. It's just, if you go to morninginvest.com/gold, you can read all about it on their gold kit. And it's a free download, so you can learn more about it. That's where I buy my gold, is through Birch Gold. And you can buy, you know, small amounts of it. So if you've got money sitting in the US dollar right now in a bank account that's just sitting there, that's specifically who I'm talking about. If you don't have any savings, and unfortunately, that's not who I'm talking to right now. But if you do have some savings, you see that the US dollar is continuing to lose money every month, every month. Why would you keep your family's future tied up in that? Why? So just go to morninginvest.com/gold, check out that free gold kit. Again, they're not a sponsor or anything, but that's where I get my gold from, Birch Gold. So go check them out and you can start to invest in gold or silver. Silver, a lot of people believe, has the biggest upside right now. So silver could potentially be, and for a fraction of the cost of gold, but precious metals, Bitcoin, Ethereum, other cryptocurrencies right now, you know, I'm not telling you what to invest in, you know, go do your own due diligence, figure it out for yourself. But personally, you know, I'm not a financial advisor, but personally, this is where I'm putting my money, into these assets, because we see the writing on the wall for the US dollar. Why would you want to have your future tied to that? Tied to the US dollar. So please, please, please be very, very careful. Yes, I'm not a financial advisor. You have to say that. I guess people think, like, oh, is he a financial advisor? Financial advisors are idiots, by the way. Financial advisors, most of them, tell you to invest in the stock market. They tell you to invest in assets that they're making money off of. So,
you don't have to, like, it doesn't take, I watched a documentary that was pretty eye-opening where it showed that, Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, and other people over in the Middle East, which is why I think there's such a conflict over there. They have wanted to start trading oil and gold in the dinar and a couple other forms of gold, because they understand that gold is not going to ever lose value. Whereas they're right now, they're trading oil in a currency that is decreasing every single day. It gets worth less. And so they're trying to be smart because they're investors too. And it makes sense for them. So if they're trying so hard to get it to be traded in gold, then that should tell you something.
Exactly. And by the way, history, you know, you must learn from history. 4,000 years of history. Gold has been around for 4,000 years as a currency and as a store of value. So why would you think any differently now? Yes, it's difficult to transport. Yes, it's difficult to extract. It's not as liquid or movable as cryptocurrency, etc. Yes. But the US dollar? Like, you want your future tied to that? So, I'm a big believer in precious metals. They're not going anywhere. There's a finite amount. And, you know, we continue to use it as a store of value worldwide. So maybe we'll move back to the gold standard. Wouldn't that be nice? The U.S. economy back to the gold standard. It's not going to happen, but it would be nice to think that that would happen.
Yeah, no, and change the Keynesian. I don't know if you do any research on the Austrian economics model versus the Keynesian model that we're in right now. The Keynesian model is taking money by force, where the Austrian model is not. It's a completely different model. And if you look at it, it's just like the Keynesian model is the what we're doing. It's like the Alan Greenspans of the world. Print, 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 print. And even he, at the end of his career, was like, this isn't going to work. You know, gold is still valuable. Like I think he kind of regretted the way that he looked at finance when he was leaving. Do you remember that? How he was kind of like...
Oh, yeah. I did a whole video here a few weeks ago on Alan Greenspan and what he, you know... Well, he was a fan. He was always a fan of gold. That's the thing, that all of these Fed chairmen are always fans of gold. But then they get into the Fed and they can't be fans of gold anymore suddenly. Why? Because they need to be the corporate man, the company man, right? And they need to support the U.S. dollar. And then they leave the Fed and they go back to liking gold again because the U.S. dollar is not backed by gold anymore. And so Alan Greenspan, I mean, I featured a segment here on the show where I showed a clip of him from right after he left office as Fed chair. And he said, you know, the U.S. dollar, he's like, you know, it's basically not, it's worthless. It's not tied to anything. And gold is where it's at. Like, well, why didn't you say that while you were Fed chair? You couldn't, because it would undermine the system. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. I remember the time him and Ron Paul would go back and forth because Ron was on the committee. And it was like arguing about gold. And Greenspan actually had to argue against gold.
Yeah. And then he had to be the company man.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's how they work it, man. It's how it goes. Got to argue against this crap. All the time, they play this game. Back and forth, back and forth. So that's my take on that. I have one more story I want to get to here in a minute. Just watching what's going on here. On some breaking news, but just keeping my eyes on the markets, what's happening.
You're watching
here.
Tennis, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm just watching a Rafael Nadal match.
Play Boris
Yeltsin.
what was that really good tennis player, the German guy, Boris?
Bjorn Borg.
No, not Bjorn Borg. Boris Becker.
Boris Johnson. Boris Becker.
Yeah, Boris Becker, Johnson. That was it.
Boris Johnson's an excellent tennis player.
I would like to see that. I'd like to see him play Trump.
Can you imagine? My God. They'd have a heart attack after like
oh my one gosh. Round.
Oh man. Thank you for your super chats. Tanda, are they going to do stimulus checks multiple, or are they not trying to keep us destitute? I don't know if they're going to do multiple. I don't even know, you know, if they're going to do actual stimulus checks. Yeah, I know. Actual stimulus checks at all. You know, that's the big question. So, you know, that's what I'm watching to see is like what is actually going to be handed out. We'll see the extension of the child tax credit as part of this new stimulus. That's good. But as far as like where this thing goes next, I'm not entirely sure. We'll see if they want to hand out extra actual checks.
Yeah, I'm going to say no.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about this. So President Joe Biden affirmed on Tuesday that he would not immediately extend anything as it relates to getting out of Afghanistan. He's not going to stay. We're not going to stay any longer. We're not going to continue to prop it up this failed war. We're not going to extend to this beyond this August 31st deadline to withdraw U.S. combat troops from Afghanistan. He made this apparent yesterday in a Tuesday afternoon address. The president said that 70,700 people had already been evacuated from the country since August 14th. 70,000! And that the U.S. was on pace to finish evacuations on his timeline. Good news. Again, I'm critical of President Biden. I think that the way that some of this has been handled here at the end has been a mess, but this was all a plan that had been put in place by Mike Pompeo and the Trump administration, and it was on their timeline. And they had already, under the Trump administration, started following the agreement with the Taliban. It was, they were leaving bases, they were reducing troops, they were already leaving, and they undercut what the Afghan government could have done. It's clearly what happened. And President Biden could have made this extraction much nicer. It's absolutely ugly, and they've definitely screwed up on this. But I am going to praise the president for not bowing to other people and wanting to stay longer. Like, it's a mess. Get them out of there. Get these evacuations. Yes, get these interpreters. Get the people that have helped us out of there. Give them a safe haven in the United States. Open up our doors for them. They are not terrorists. They are human beings. Okay? So in making this decision, the president agreed with the Pentagon, which I was surprised with. There was a Pentagon recommendation to stick to this deadline. Don't extend it. Surprising, right? The Pentagon. But not everyone is on the same page with this, particularly those inside the military-industrial complex who've been making millions of dollars off of bombing innocent people. So let's meet Mike Waltz, shall we? Here's Mike Waltz. Here's Mike Waltz, Congressman Mike Waltz, Republican from Florida. From Florida's 6th Congressional District. Do you know this guy? You should. Because in recent weeks, Waltz has called on President Joe Biden to reverse course, relaunch military operations in the region, and crush the Taliban offensive by committing American air power, supported by special forces. So he wants us to go back in to Afghanistan. The Florida congressman has warned, I love this, he's calling it Al-Qaeda 3.0. He's even coined a term to get us scared about Al-Qaeda 3.0. And he stated that no negotiations should take place with the Taliban until the situation is stabilized militarily. Okay, I'm sorry. You realize your former boss, President Trump, and Mike Pompeo negotiated with the Taliban for a withdrawal of American troops. And they were also still attacking our American troops at the same time. Watch yesterday's video that we did here on the channel for a deeper analysis and evidence that we went through in that. So that's what you want? Okay. So he made an appearance on television to talk about why we should go back to Afghanistan.
The president says he stands behind his decision to leave because, as he said, there never would be a good time to withdraw. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with it. And it's unfortunate to hear him triple down on this disastrous policy and point fingers, whether that's to the previous administration, the Afghans, even his own intelligence community. I think at the end of the day, you have two choices in Afghanistan. You have a small presence focused on counterterrorism and supporting the Afghan military, or you face what we're facing now, which will be a cesspool of terrorism. The problem is, terrorism that happens in Afghanistan doesn't stay in Afghanistan. We will see Al-Qaeda 3.0. They are working closely with the Taliban, and they do intend to attack America again. That's not just according to me. That's according to Biden's own intelligence assessments.
On that front, as we mentioned, you served multiple tours of duty in that country. And I wonder, how hard has it been to watch you to watch the Taliban return to power?
I love how the media couches this, right? Like, you had multiple tours there. How hard is it on you? How hard has it been on you?
Well, it's been a terrible mix of, being enraged and being grief-stricken at the same time. My heart breaks for so many thousands of Afghan interpreters who took a bold stand, a public stand, to stand with us. They're not just being hunted down. Their entire families are being hunted down right now as we speak. For so many Afghan young girls and women who saw...
Women and girls. You're so concerned about Afghan women and girls all of a sudden. The Afghan women. The Afghan women and girls line. It's my favorite. You're so upset about this.
Let's see. What does he say about Saudi Arabia, our allies, who don't even let women drive in that country?
Right.
No, nobody's saying anything about that.
A better life and hope in their future. That now is being dashed as the Taliban reinstitutes Sharia law. And, you know, my heart breaks for so many veterans and Gold Star families and even victims of 9/11 as we head into the 20th anniversary of 9/11, who are wondering whether their sacrifices were made in vain. I want to say to that last group in particular, it was not made in vain. America was kept safe for decades. We do no longer have planes flying into buildings or suicide bombers on school buses. But I fear we are heading into a situation where we may face that again.
All right. We
should replace every time he says his heart, we should change that to my bank account.
My bank account is hurt. So why are we saying this? Well, I'm saying this because Mike Waltz made millions. Turns out has made millions. Congressman Mike Waltz has made millions in defense contracts. Florida Republican Mike Waltz has made up to $25 million from the sales of Metis Solutions, a defense contractor with a spotty record training Afghan security forces. Few lawmakers, The Intercept writes, are as outspoken about the end of the war in Afghanistan as Michael Waltz, a Republican from Florida's 6th Congressional District. In recent weeks, Waltz has called on President Joe Biden to reverse course, leading the push in the pages of newspapers, over talk radio, on cable television. Waltz couches his advocacy in his identity and experience. Not only is he a sitting member of Congress, but he's a former Green Beret, a former aide to Dick Cheney. And he's a father who's just been sickened by what's to come for the Afghan women and girls that are being mercilessly abused by the Taliban and sold into sex slavery. Yeah, this has been happening for 20 years. Like, you're surprised by this? He always leaves out, though, this part of his story. Before his successful run in Congress, he managed a lucrative defense contracting firm with offices in Afghanistan. The company was recently sold to Pacific Architects and Engineers, or PAE, one of the largest war contractors in the United States, has hired to train and mentor Afghan security forces. The deal personally enriched Waltz by $26 million. $26 million. So no wonder he wants these coveted contracts to train special forces. And by the way, so let me just get this right. This guy made $26 million off of training the Afghan security forces, the very same forces that laid down their weapons and welcomed the Taliban back. These are the very same security forces that we paid over $2 trillion of our taxpayer money to train, weaponize, and protect, paid their salaries. And he trained them. His company trained these people. Who's to blame? He's blaming Biden. Your company trained these people, and they laid down their weapons at the first sign of the Taliban walking into the villages. Whose fault is it? And you made $26 million off of this war, and you want us to go back. Yeah, here, you want us to go back.
Play that little clip of him again.
Comment about Al-Qaeda 3.0 is a pretty damning statement. And I wonder, the country, the United States, faces national security risks every day. Do you believe that our power to face them down has been eroded as a result of all this?
Oh, absolutely. Our credibility around the world has been seriously damaged. If we do face Al-Qaeda 3.0 and we have to send our soldiers back again, who is going to trust us? Who would work with us on the ground? And furthermore, we have no bases in the region. You know, President Biden continues to throw out this term over the horizon counterterrorism. The big difference from when ISIS came surging back after Obama pulled out of Iraq too soon and we had to go back bases there. We had Israel, Turkey, the Gulf states, the Kurds. Around Afghanistan, not a single country, not one, has agreed to host American forces so that we can stay on top of Al-Qaeda. We are blind in the region. No one's going to trust us. And we have no bases for which to get after half the world's terrorist organizations that exist in that part of the world.
So let me get this right. Thank you. Thank you, Congressman Waltz. So we need to build more bases around the world is what you're arguing for. And David, I'm sorry.
That's all right, man.
He only made $26 million off of war. He's upset that we need to do more.
And you know what's more sad? Is part of that $26 million was my money.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You know, I don't know what to say about it. You know, I mean, these people are elected, right? They lie to the American people. They, you know, they hide this part of their history. They're part of the same military industrial complex that continues to keep us in these endless wars. You see CNBC asking the questions. What are they asking? He's like, you know, how do you feel? How do you feel as someone who served in Afghanistan? How does it make you feel? Yeah. What about all of the thousands and thousands of women and children that were killed as a result of our bombing? We don't ever talk about that.
Well, but
how
do
you feel, Congressman? How do you feel, Congressman? And by the way, have you seen this whole ridiculous, I wasn't going to do it in the show today, but I might as well now that I've, this ridiculous propaganda campaign by these congressmen, by the military, sending out all of these like viral photos now. They're like, this is what the mainstream media, okay, this is Barbara Starr over at CNN tweeting out. Like, this is what the military industrial complex tweets out. Like, here are all these soldiers saving babies, right?
Well, you know,
here's from the Defense Department. The Defense Department itself tweeted this out. And thanks to Caitlin Johnston for doing such great reporting on this. U.S. Marines from the 24th Military Expedition Unit doing what they do best, providing fresh water to children. Okay. Never mind. Oh, I love this photo. Looks like it's like pose, get ready, pose. Get ready. Here we go.
Oh, can we get? Looks like they got the same photographer from January 6th.
Can we get our? Yeah. Can we get our most handsome member to come down here and just hand out water? I'm going to hold it here for you.
And is COVID not an issue there? Like, where's their masks?
Like I'm going to show you how to drink water. That's what we do. That's what we do, you know? We don't bomb people. All we do is give them water.
Well, and how many times have they been busted now sharing pictures and videos from, like, 2013 and stuff like that? Like, we don't even know. Like, we're over here. We have no idea if these pictures came from this week or 6 weeks ago or before. I mean, nobody's masked up. So is it possible that these came pre-pandemic? Like, we don't know.
Exactly. So I love what Caitlin says here. That's right. Invade a nation, kill hundreds of thousands of its inhabitants, stay for decades, accomplish nothing besides making war profiteers wealthy, drop everything and then leave, and then have your armed goon squad take PR photos with local infants so everyone thinks that your military is awesome.
It's like, you remember did you ever see the documentary that showed that girl that was in Congress testifying that they were killing babies in Iraq and that's why we had to invade, and it turned out that she was like the daughter of a diplomat or something over there. Do you remember that?
Did
you
watch that? No, I don't.
Yeah, so that girl's testimony is one of the things that got us into the war, and it was completely fake from the onset. And it's like, this is just drumming up, like, this is just more, hey, we got to be there. We care about the kids. We care about the women and children. And it's just something to keep us there because these people are so scared they're going to lose the money that they're making over there.
Yeah, so let's send out a PR campaign. I mean, I love the fact that the Department of Defense is literally tweeting out pictures of this, of the U.S. Marines, like, feeding water to babies.
Like, they don't just call it propaganda. That's a propaganda campaign is what it is. It should just be a P campaign. No PR.
The coverage,
it's not public relation.
Ian Overton says, you know, the coverage this photo is getting is understandable, but my team has spent months facing rejected freedom of information requests from the Ministry of Defense regarding data on Afghan children killed during British Army military engagements. So there's another story to be told. Yeah. So British soldier says, oh, this sums up what we're doing here in Afghanistan. Yeah. But how about this? Why don't we find out? Why don't you release the information on how many innocents have been killed? How many schools have been bombed by us? Can we have that information? Is that allowed? Why can't you share that information?
How come a bunch of YouTubers have a party at a bowling alley and people are all up in arms and why they're not wearing masks? Because nobody's saying a word about these people not wearing masks at all. Like, nobody's questioning that. Like, but YouTubers go to a party at a bowling alley and everybody's like, they're not wearing masks. They're not social distancing. I mean, this is like, this guy's got a baby, you know, at his face with no mask.
Right. Ooh, everyone, look at this picture of a sweet, kindly U.S. stormtrooper cuddling one of the Afghan infants. His coworkers happen to not have murdered yet. I'm just going to hold this one. Here's good. Do you get a photo of this? Can you get a photo of this?
Jeez.
The UN found that at least 26,000 children were killed or maimed in the fighting in Afghanistan between 2005 and 2019.
I mean, it's so hypocritical.
Also, how crazy is they spent trillions of dollars supposedly nation building in Afghanistan and basic water and plumbing needs are still an issue? It's like, hey, stop doing photo ops with babies and go dig some wells or something. Yeah, we don't have water, but we've spent $2 trillion? And we're complaining in the United States that we're going to spend $1.5 trillion on our infrastructure?
Over 10 years.
Bree says, thank you to Nine Line Apparel for posting these. To my brothers and sisters in arms, you inspire me once more. Semper Fi. Great.
I mean, what do they do? Hey, excuse me, ma'am, excuse me. We need an interpreter over here, please, really quick. Yes, interpreter. Oh, can we hold your baby really quick? We need to take some photos to show how concerned we are. Hey, there's finally a mask. A little girl in a mask. Finally, one mask.
Hmm. A collection of lost young boys separated from their parents at the gates are being cared for by the U.S. military.
Stay behind that rope.
Yeah.
Don't you cross that rope.
But this is Biden's fault. Like, this is all, you know? Man. Not everyone is impressed by these photos. There's so much competition, but the images of Western soldiers with Afghan babies and Western journalists proclaiming their humanity and compassion is really up there with the most offensive, cynical, and clearly coordinated imperialist propaganda spectacles I can remember in a while. Not impressed at all. Not impressed with photographs of GIs holding babies. You think you're going to forget about Bush and Tony Blair's lies? Guantanamo Bay, Abu Ghraib prison, drone strikes, the kidnapping and rendition, the executions, troves of money given to arms dealers? Save your corny photo ops.
Well, and again, how hypocritical is it that they talk about how this is all about women and women's rights and these women are going to be sold into slavery and all this other stuff, yet Saudi Arabia murders people in the street and they are our ally. We send them money. We communicate with them all the time. We sell them weapons. Like where's nobody's saying anything about that.
Oh, David, you cynical bastard.
Yeah.
You know, the media and the military industrial complex are all one thing. They are combined. They are. I mean, the fact that you have like literally the media run by billionaires asking a question like this, like, what was it like for you? You know, what was it like for you
to attack America again? That's not just according to me. That's according to Biden's own intelligence
system. Yeah, they're going to attack us again. You know why? Because we're in their freaking country. Get the hell out of their country and they will stop it. And they will stop attacking us. Leave. By the way, domestic terrorism is way more of a problem, and the violence in the United States, where you know thousands of Americans are dying on a regular basis from gun violence in the United States, is way more of a problem than some guy on a camel in Afghanistan. So we have to change our entire lives, and we have to spend trillions of dollars to change our lives because somebody tried to light his shoes on fire on an airplane. And we hire all of these like private contractors to make America secure. And this guy, this congressman, makes $26 million off of this. But so I mean, America is going to be attacked again, he says.
What? I mean, if they can't figure out a way to make us fearful, then we would start to argue about that $750 billion a year that our military gets. Well, that we know about. If we knew all of this stuff, you know, and we didn't have some kind of justification. Like, if they weren't holding those babies and making us like think that, you know, we're there because we're it's a humanitarian thing. We're there to help them. We're not there to hurt them. Are you kidding me? Like the all of the 170 some thousand kids and women that we killed over there, that was collateral damage. That's for the greater good. So just get that in your head that we had to do that in order to hold those babies. We would not be there holding those babies if we hadn't killed all those other people.
Yes. I mean, we are a force for good, David, right? We are a force for good. We will come and kill your children because we want to spread democracy. Like, we are a force for good. Do you feel good about that?
Yeah. I mean, and you know what? I think at some point, like, if China ever comes over here and tries to do the same thing here, because, like, you know, our government isn't helping us. Our government's holding our money and spending it on war or on killing people. We're have 20 million people facing homelessness. So what if another country that actually, let's say a country that's better than, let's say Portugal, let's use that for an example. Let's say Portugal's like, you know what? I can't believe that the United States don't have healthcare. They're not taking care of their people. They've got so many people starving. Kids are on the street. That should not happen. We're going to go there and we're going to invade and we're going to make that better. And that they bring an army over here and they do that. And you know what? They just happen to kill about 100, 200,000 children, you know, half a million mothers and fathers, brothers, uncles, stuff like that. But you know what? It's for the greater good. We're doing it to help the American people. So we would understand, right? We would allow that to happen. We wouldn't become terrorists and try to stop them, right?
No. I mean, they're winning my heart and my mind. They're winning hearts and minds. You know, when they kill moms and babies at schools like that, you know, we're gonna fall in love with America for how they spread their democracy. The way I'm really impressed with how America spreads its democracy.
Yeah.
Here's what they do. They blow up schools. That's a great way to do it.
Hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
We would do what are called double taps, which means we would go in, we would bomb an area, right? We would circle around. And then when the first responders came in, we would bomb them, we'd hit them. And then after a while, we would come back and we would even hit funerals. So at what point are we the terrorists? Like, to them, we are. To those people over there, we are the terrorists.
By the way, China, I don't know if China just announced that they want to investigate human rights violations against the United States and Britain and other allies for its role in the war in Afghanistan. China is asking us to examine human rights violations, and they absolutely should.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't they? Right? You know, we go in there and destroy a country. Well, it's been destroyed, but we continue to destroy it.
If any other country was doing what we're doing, like, no, what other country is doing what we do? What other country is nation building? What, I mean, other than our allies that come in and help us and then they leave or whatever and we stay there. But what other countries are doing anything remotely close to what we're doing? Going in and killing people and just nation building there and trying to spread our democracy. Like, how in the hell are we getting away with this? How are we not already on some kind of panel like for war crimes?
Exactly. Oh, because we're the greatest country in the world, David. So you can't talk crap about us, you know?
Yeah.
You know, my biggest concern though is about this congressman, Mark Waltz, who made $26 million off of bombing innocent people and also continuing a war so that he could line his own pockets. I'm really concerned though about him and like, how does he feel today?
On that front, as we mentioned, you served multiple tours of duty in that.
Let me just listen to the mainstream media fawning over this
country. And I wonder how.
I wonder how hard is it for you? How hard has it been for you? You made $26 million. Did you lose any children bombed by American bombs in there? Like how has it been for you? How
hard has it been to watch you or to watch the Taliban return to power?
Well, it's been a terrible mix of, being enraged and being grief stricken at the same time. My heart breaks for so many thousands of Afghan interpreters who took a bold stand, a public stand to stand with us. They're not just being hunted down. Their entire families are being hunted down right now as we speak. For so many Afghan young girls and women who saw a better life and hope in their future, that now is being dashed as the Taliban reinstitutes Sharia law. And, you know, my heart breaks for so many veterans and Gold Star families and even victims of 9/11 as we head into the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah, let's. What sad stories can I lump together? The women, the children, the Afghan interpreters. You know, let's never and not forget the men that we trained, that my company trained, and I made $26 million off of training these people. They laid down their weapons. You know, we did a really crappy job of training them, but I made $26 million. My heart goes out to them.
And on your way out, sir, do you have any recommendations on stuff we should invest in? Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's talk about my investments.
Right. I've got a company you can invest in. It's a war profiteer company, little known company, but we make bombs. So a lot of the villages that have been destroyed over the past few years in Afghanistan, my company created that. And so you can make bank off of that.
So MSM, mainstream, it should be mainstream military media, because that's all it is. That is all it has become, is it is just anytime there's war, they beat the war drums, and then they have little stories here and there to kind of keep us, to make us think they might be telling us the truth. You know, this story might be true. Russia might actually be trying to shut off our grid. Thank you, Rachel Maddow. Like, that could be true, right? I mean, that's possible, right?
It's possible. Yeah, that's really possible.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Peace out. Have a great afternoon, everyone. Much love to all of you.